Hello and welcome back to the Comic Lero podcast, the podcast that has deep dives into the best, worst, and middest of comic books, graphic novels, and sometimes mangas. I'm your host, the soon-to-be-known as Comic Center. With me, as always, is my nomadic co-host, it's Jamie. I just wanted to see how quickly I could do it.
I was about to say, you've come in a little bit too hot.
So my thinking was, on the one hand, I like saying stuff really quickly, like as a voiceover thing, it's kind of right. Like a tongue-twister mouth practice kind of thing.
Pickled peppers, partridges, that kind of stuff.
That kind of stuff, yeah. I used to do the, so it's not quite a tongue twister, but I used to do the, and our generation will know this exactly, the welcome down to Wally's wacky, wavering, inflatable, I'm playing two men, you know, that one. I used to know it exactly, and I could do it over and over again. The other thing was, I like the idea of people starting the podcast and going, wait, am I on double speed?
Yeah. What you needed to do was try and pitch yourself up a little bit to get there then.
Does it not double speed without pitch?
Welcome to the Comic Lero podcast. Well,
do you double speed podcast at all?
No, never.
I don't.
I don't even make playlists out of music, mate. I like to listen to things the way that the creators intended.
I play
Sega Mega Drive on a CRT in 2024, Ryan.
How do you have space for a CRT?
But do you know what? I was in this like used place that I liked the other day, and they had a bunch of portable CRTs, like little CRTs, and I was like, I kind of want one. I want one just so I can get like VHS pornography and plug in my Sega Mega Drive.
There's someone on a wrestling subreddit who will record wrestling pay-per-view, so big wrestling events, record them to VHS.
Sick.
On a CRT 4:3 ratio. Oh. So it looks like the old Attitude Era.
So
like,
cool.
Yeah, like it's so nostalgic, but he does it for he does like a highlight that's like several minutes, like 10-15 minutes. And I'll look at it for like a minute and go, that's cool. And I'm like, well, I'm done now. Like, I'm
that's
not even
so
watching the full
cool,
15 minutes.
Ryan.
But it is very cool in the moment.
Yeah, so I mean, again, I love old technology. So traditionally when you speed audio up, it does change the pitch.
Yes.
I think when you do it digitally,
I think podcasts automatically preserve the pitch.
Yeah.
So that's what I do when I'm editing. When I'm editing or when I think I'm editing, but it's the people in the other room.
For the listeners, Ryan and I had a battle because at one point he wanted to start releasing the podcast.
I wouldn't say battle.
Up.
I think it was more like
So Ryan was adamant, right, that it would be better. Do you not remember this? This was a while ago. You were adamant.
I remember exactly the conversation you're talking about. I think you were using words like battle and adamant.
Ryan wanted to start releasing the podcast sped up to the extent that he edited an episode and left it very slightly sped up to see if I would notice.
Yeah.
And within 10, like, 2 seconds of me listening to your editor's proof, I went, Ryan, you fucking sped it up, fix it.
Yes.
And you were like, yeah, all right.
And the reason it was worth checking is because to me it sounded very slow, but that's because I was listening to it on double speed while
you were editing.
Yeah. And the problem with that is there's a similar thing where there was an experiment where they looked this up, it's on Google somewhere, but they basically put glasses on someone that turned the world upside down. And that person's vision corrected while they were wearing the glasses. So in this, and then when they took the glasses off, their natural vision
was upside down.
Yeah. And the brain had to slowly bring it back to normal.
It's a well-observed thing.
Yeah. And it's the same thing, I think, with if you listen to a bunch of stuff on double speed, as soon as you then put it to normal speed, your brain goes, this is really slow because you've got used to the double speed.
Listeners of the podcast, can you tell us if you listen on double speed? Because you know that trick, that same cognitive... I used to use that with my Game Boy in the back of the car.
Right.
So my parents used to tell me off because my Game Boy was too loud. So I would... I would find a point that they deemed acceptable and then turn it down just a little bit from there and strain to hear it for just a minute so that when I turned it back up to the point that they deemed acceptable, suddenly that sounded really loud.
That's a surprising amount of self-awareness for a child.
I mean, today I've not been the most self-aware adult, but I'm a pretty self-aware person and I was quite a self-aware child.
Yeah. Maybe more self-aware as a child and life's just wound you down, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's just worn me down. So today...
I was going to say, and now we're in the fallout of your life. And speaking of fallout... very, very appropriate. Fallout, the franchise. But we are doing a comic because, surprisingly...
One exists.
Only one exists. So, and that's insane to me.
You have picked the worst person. Because, like, I didn't own a game. So, the last
Bearing in mind, I didn't pick you. We were already hosting a podcast. I was like, we better do something Fallout for the TV show.
For reference, kids, I didn't own a games console between the PS2 and the Nintendo Switch.
They pretty much missed Fallout.
Like, they are the last two consoles I owned. So when I was a student, I lived with a lot of roommates, and a lot of them had Xbox 360s in their rooms.
Right.
And I remember seeing Shooty Bang Face in the desert with mech suits.
Yeah, that's Fallout.
Yeah.
Both of them, yeah.
I'm going to assume that that's Fallout, right?
That's specifically Fallout New Vegas because of the desert, which is basically what we are talking about.
So I've seen some Fallout. There are Pip Boys, and there's the little dude in the blue thing with the yellow hair, right?
Yes.
Yellow hair, blonde hair.
for the layman's, blonde.
This is the thing, like, because I think there's a big crossover between gamers and comic book dudes, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like, and I'm kind of neither.
Like, you've been forced to become one, at least.
I mean, like, the type of gaming I do is the type of gaming that I think is openly reviled by most gamers. I'm a Nuzlocker. I Nuzlocke Pokemon games.
I don't think most gamers don't know what that is.
Well, yeah.
Gamers, talking about who they hate within the community, it's probably people who play mobile games and call themselves gamers.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's an opinion that is held by a bunch of, like, who describe themselves as real gamers.
So for the audience, Ryan's already aware of this because it's just something that happened in our lives. I read the issue that we're going to talk about today. And then I called Ryan and I was like, Ryan, I can't find the rest of it. And he was like, no, it's just the one. I was like, but nothing, like, it's so short.
Yeah, it's one 50-page prequel comic to New Vegas.
So, basically,
the episode's mostly going to be talking about the Fallout franchise.
So, the dude in the shiny suit, right?
Yes.
Is he a character in the game?
Yes, in New Vegas. And in the game, he was voiced by the late, great Matthew Perry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Matthew Perry played Fallout 3. Really loved it. Like, his words, apparently he was obsessed with it. And then when he heard they were making another one, he was like, please let me do a voice.
Well, that makes me like him a whole lot more now.
Yeah.
Because he sounds like Chandler.
Yeah. And do you know, well, he sounds like Chandler, but he says a lot of, like, now, can you get hip to that, daddy-o? Like, that kind of 50s, like,
oh, wow.
Talk. But that's the point of the character. Like,
I mean, Matthew Perry would have been so good at that as well.
He's a bit monotone in that, and that's coming from me. Like,
don't put yourself down, Ryan.
I'm self aware. He is a bit flat in it, which is unfortunate. But because when you find out it's Matthew Perry, you go like, oh, I was hoping for a bit more, and you don't know what the process is in behind the scenes and how they recorded. John Goodman is also in it. He plays a character called Caesar, which kind of gives away, like, what the character is.
Yeah.
But he's really good in his role as well.
I mean, John Goodman's always good.
Yeah. And
am I the only one around here?
Who cares about the rules? that old quote.
Yeah.
He was really good in that Cloverfield film, where he's in the bunker. Cloverfield Road or Lane. It's really good. It's worth checking out. Real bottle episode kind of film.
So what? Is that the one that was made to look like it was made on a smartphone? Or was it the one that was made on a smartphone?
Are you thinking of the one where someone's filming?
Yeah.
Like, no. It's the second one. It's like a proper film, but all takes place in like a bunker, like a below bunker kind of thing. It's like end of the world. What?
Just registered.
It's a good use of, like, you know, films that take place in one setting.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. I completely understand what you mean. I just like the idea that a standalone film.
A bottle film.
Yeah. A standalone film could feel so claustrophobic that you're like, well, this one's a bottle episode.
Well, the closest, the most claustrophobic one is probably that Ryan Reynolds film, Buried, where he's literally buried alive in a coffin. I haven't seen it, but I think I've seen a trailer, so I assume it all looked exactly like that.
What is it, like 364 hours or something?
372? It's the James Franco film.
Yeah, where everyone sees exactly what they want from James Franco, which is him just cutting little bits off himself.
I mean, it's one big bit and it was his arm.
Scandal noted.
Scandal, yes, definitely. but I mean, that the real guy did it to himself.
I know, he was hardcore as fuck, wasn't he? That's well, so was, metal.
Yeah, it was that or die, but I think if I was in that situation, I'd probably just die.
Yeah, so, me too. I'd just be like, fuck it, I had a good run.
Yeah, good on him, well done. But yeah, Fallout.
Yeah, right.
Back to the gaming franchise, has a comic.
So, I think it's more fun if I give a rundown of the Fallout franchise knowing nothing about it.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, is that possible?
Like, well, this is it. So, with what little I've experienced of it, I think I've watched somebody play like 25 minutes of New Vegas.
Right.
So
I should say we're going to do franchise first just to, because it's the Fallout episode, and then we'll talk about the comic at some point.
So my understanding, post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland future.
Yep.
Generations of people have been born and died in these bunkers, and
vaults,
now it's
vaults.
I mean, bunker is fine.
They use the word vault a lot. Like, it's synonymous with the Fallout franchise.
Vault, right?
Yeah. Well, that, and they're all called like Vault 99, Vault 52. Like,
so people have like generated. So basically, humanity's been preserved in these vaults, right?
Yeah.
And like, children have been born and died, and so the people that are coming out of the vaults don't necessarily remember the world before the nuclear fallout, right?
There's only one type of person. I hesitate to say person in the Fallout world that remembers how it was back then.
Are they like wraiths or something?
No, they're pretty sure they're called ghouls.
Ghouls.
Right. And they are people who literally survived the initial blasts but were irradiated to the point of becoming skinless monsters, essentially.
Nice.
But some of them retained their personality.
It's fucking hot.
So they would like talk, like lived through and would tell people after, like, this is how it used to be. In Fallout 4, there's a guy selling vault access. He's like a door-to-door salesman. So he's like, what you and your family could do with signing up to a vault entry, whatever, like in case the bombs ever land. Oh no, the bombs are landing. Like, and then immediately your family gets in. He gets left out because he himself could not afford it. And then as soon as you come out, or sometime after you get out, he's there. So this was a vault that everyone was cryogenically frozen.
Yeah.
You get out and he's like, oh, glad you got into the vault then. And you're like, Jesus Christ, what happened to you? And he's like, the radiation melted my skin off. Like, their voices all become that as well. Literally, I'm not even done. That's accurate representation.
So anyway, so people get out of the vaults.
Yes.
Some of them were cryogenically frozen, so they know what's going in. Some of them were born in the vaults. They're, you know.
Yeah.
And then they have to fight it out for supremacy in the factions that have established after the post-apocalypse.
I mean, supremacy is a strong term. I think just fighting to survive is probably a more accurate term if you're not the main character, you know?
Plot armor.
Yeah.
Big, strong plot armor. And then I imagine there's some kind of like game mechanics where you have to like avoid being irradiated.
Yeah. There's radiation. That era of games, like that was all like, in Dark Souls, it was like poisoned swamps. Like, you stand in the swamp, you're going to get poisoned. Obviously, Fallout was, you're getting irradiated.
And are they open world, like sandbox?
So I think they all are. The first two, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a point. It's like bird's eye view. You're still one character, but it's like bird's eye view and you click like where they go. And it's that kind of map. It's that kind of open world where it's only illuminated the area immediately around you.
Yeah.
And as you move, the illuminated area moves with you. So that's how you explore and see other places. Obviously, then Fallout 3 was completely revolutionized. That was then proper 3D, first-person open world.
So what were the did the earliest Fallout games have different mechanics?
Similar. I mean, I don't know specifically mechanics I haven't played, but they're pretty similar games in terms of like the characters and the monsters.
What consoles were they on?
Like PC. I don't think they were on like normal consoles.
Right.
They were like early PC games.
Games for weird people.
Well, that was when gaming was like a very niche, like it was that time.
Yeah.
When Fallout 3 came out, I remember that was growing up for me. That was one of the first times I was like, three? When were the other two? Like some game series like Final Fantasy, you were just like, that's just numbered before my time. Like, I don't care. But the fact that Fallout 3 came out and everyone's like, oh my God, Fallout 3. And I was like, how have I never heard about? When did Fallout 1 and 2 come out?
And then you realize.
Yeah, exactly. Looking into a little more, you go, oh, right. That similar thing happened with me, like Witcher 3. But at least then I was just like, and same thing will happen right now with the Baldur's Gate 3. Those games, they were on the consoles, they existed, but they were just so underknown because they were like, all right games, but good for people's niches and specific interests.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, like in between Baldur's Gate 2 and Baldur's Gate 3, D&D became huge.
Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 3 just in itself, and I haven't played it, but everyone says it's amazing compared to the previous ones.
Right.
So it's more that those games like Witcher 3 and Fallout 3 and Baldur's Gate 3, for some reason all the third games, but they're so well received that people are like, oh my god, have you heard of this franchise of games? And then they go back and play the old ones. But it takes one really good one to kind of break through the...
To get people into it.
Yeah, exactly. To have people raving about it, telling their friends about it, that kind of thing.
So my assumptions about the Fallout series are largely correct.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you've hit the broad strokes.
I thought this was going to be funnier. I thought I was going to be completely off the mark and you were like... No, Jamie, it's a sim. It's the Sims, but radioactive.
Well, let's.
And you have to collect nuggets.
I can give you little nuggets of information about it. Nice. I mean, in the first. So in Fallout 3, I've only played Fallout 3, New Vegas, and 4.
Right.
Fallout 3, you literally start from birth. So it's one of the few games where you play the entire life of your character. You're born, and that's like the control tutorial
thing.
That's
the one I've seen. So you're a baby in the vault, aren't
you?
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson's your dad.
Yes, I've seen that one. Yes. I've seen somebody play that one.
I really liked Fallout 3. As soon as you get out of the vault, so you live your life in the vault, and then once you get out, you go to the first town that's like within walking distance, and the game does a good job of being like, hey, you're out in this open world, who knows where to go, and you see something in the distance, looks like somewhere to start your adventure, and it was a town called Megaton because it had an unexploded nuclear bomb in the center of it, and they just built a town around it, and some people worshipped it and stuff. And as soon as you get in, you can tell they're trying to do the moral questions kind of thing of the game, because as soon as you get there, someone's like, yeah, there's an unexploded bomb in the middle of the thing. Ain't hurting nobody. So, you know, we just leave it there. And then some guy's like, psst, hey, kid, I'll give you money if you blow up the town. And everyone's like, oh, great. Now I have to blow up the town. Blow up the town, see what that looks like, and then go back and do the proper story.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, not blow up the town.
Yes. And that is one comparison with It's a good example of the difference between Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas.
Right.
So Fallout New Vegas is made in the same engine, and everything is like, you know, it's a separate game, but it feels like an add-on. But it's a completely separate game and setting and story. What's interesting is it was developed by a different publisher, a different studio,
right,
called Obsidian. So yeah. Bethesda made Fallout 3, and they own the Fallout franchise.
Didn't Bethesda? No.
Skyrim. Yeah.
Yeah.
Skyrim and the Elder Scrolls. They do
that
as well.
Did they also make, oh, it's the puzzle game.
You're going to have to narrow down a lot more.
The cake is a lie.
Portal, yes.
Yeah.
No, that's it's the same people who made Half-Life. It's Gabe Newell, I know that guy's name.
Yeah.
They made Steam. I can't remember the company's name. God damn, I'm going to have to look it up.
Because I played the shit out of Portal 2.
Portal 2 is amazing. So one of the best games of all time.
So it came out when I was at uni, and they had that co-op mode. And so one of my friends was like super into Portal, and so we sat and like played
Valve.
So we sat and played through the
co-op mode. Sorry for anyone who was just went Valve.
I played a lot of that, and then just recently I bought Skyrim for the Switch.
Yep, Skyrim is one of the most recommended games I've not played.
And the first... Oh, you've not played it?
No, never.
I assumed that we would have some... So one of the first things you can do, like one of the first like missions you can go on, is just to become a werewolf.
Yeah.
And so I've just been like... For a good chunk of that playthrough, I was just super wolfy. I was gonna do like a really traditional like sword and board build.
Mm.
And, you know, just like an axe and a sword and a shield. And it was like, nah, you can just be a werewolf, homie.
I think I would pick that. I should play Skyrim at some point. I literally have no time right now to do it.
Like, I imagine you have about a million consoles to play it on, though, don't you?
I mean, I've only got a PlayStation 5, but I could... I'm almost certain, without even checking, that I could
download
it. Wait,
do you not have a PS4 anymore?
No, I gave it to my dad. Because he doesn't play, and he's only just retiring now. So I was like... He used to play Doom and stuff a lot. So I was like, here's a PlayStation... Here's my PlayStation 4. Here's Doom that I got for it for, like, fucking £3 from CX. Like, go nuts.
Go
and
nuts.
Here's the next one that I got for £4. Like, it's ready for you when you go. So, yeah. And he's like, not a gamer, but used to game. He used to own, like, a PlayStation 1. Maybe PlayStation 2, but he's a very loose gamer. But I gave him the PlayStation 4 because I had the PlayStation 5. So I'm not going to... I will pack rat this stuff. That's my natural start, is to hold on to every piece of electronic equipment,
yeah,
in case I might either need it or want to use it, yeah, later on in life. So that was a very good exercise for me to be like, I should not hold on to this. I will not use it. It will just gather dust. I'll give it to someone in my life who will actually use it.
Yeah, I don't need this. This is useless.
Because if it wasn't for that, it would go back in a box, go under the bed. I would just never touch it again.
Because, yeah.
Because what if I want to play a PlayStation 4 game that's not on the PlayStation 5? Most of them are, though. So
have they already put the full catalogue on there, pretty
not
much?
The full catalogue. Not the full catalogue. Xbox is fully reverse compatible.
I was on either a PS5 or an Xbox Series S.
It's called, I constantly forget the names of the Xboxes.
Not the Xbox One, is it?
No, that was the one previous.
Yeah.
The Xbox One was alongside the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was.
Literally have to use PlayStations to remember the Xbox.
Because
stages.
Yeah, no, because they're terrible. So I was either on a PS5 or the most recent
Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was streaming a PS2 game, and it was like the jankiest experience.
Yeah, I was literally looking at the PlayStation 5 marketplace the other day just to see what deals were stuff. And they had the Toy Story 2 PlayStation 1 game. And I was so tempted to play it because I was like, I loved that game when I was a kid.
I never played it. So I was playing Ratchet Gladiator.
Right.
Which is a third person shooter. Like, it's Ratchet and Clank, but
okay,
a bit more shooty bang face. And I was playing that, and I remember that game playing so beautifully, and it played horribly. And I was like, either I just have rose-tinted, like I have nostalgia vision for this game, or there's something wrong with the way this is streaming, because this is horrific.
Yeah.
And I hate every second of
it. It's just, it's better in your head the way you remember it.
Totally.
And then seeing it now compared to everything we're used to, then it's like, oh, it's shit by today's comparison. Like, fair enough, because that's how it's meant to be. And especially like the Toy Story one is like the characters are just made out of blocks yeah, and triangles. Like that's how they're made.
So that game was really replayable because in a single run, you couldn't get access to all the weapons and all the weapon mods. But when you finished the game, it just punted you straight back to the start. But then you could turn the difficulty up on it and then keep playing to get the weapon mods. And so it was designed, like the life cycle of the weapon mods and the weapons was designed to go over multiple playthroughs.
That's, yeah, and that's standard now for like...
Is it? Yeah,
like, so I just did Spider-Man 2 recently and there was uproar on that because there was no New Game Plus mode, which is literally complete it, restart the game, the difficulty is like higher, but you retain all your upgrades and stuff.
Sick.
And all your devices and tech and whatever, you start with that.
Yeah.
But they had it on Spider-Man 1 and Miles Morales game. So when it wasn't on Spider-Man 2, everyone was like, what the fuck? And they were like, oh shit, we need to put that on now. And they only just now added it. So yeah, I have to start a new game plus on that. But
nice.
And I'm only playing that. Like I say, I don't have time for video games now. I'm only playing that because I can just get in and out whenever because I'm not that bothered about it. Like it's a bit of fun. If I play a new game, if it's good, I will like forego other stuff to keep playing it.
I've totally not seen you for entire weeks because you're playing a new game.
Yeah. And it's so rare the games I play now, like for exactly that reason. I've got podcasts to edit and shorts to edit.
We're busy people. We make shit.
We're very busy go-getters, go-setters.
I really want to do a new run of Legends Arceus.
Did you ever complete Disco Elysium?
I played a good like 10, 15 hours of it.
So first 10% story.
Is that how long it is?
I don't know. What part did you get to?
I don't remember. It was a while ago. It was like a solid 6 months ago. Ryan gifted me a game. I didn't finish it. I'm a bad person.
And it's a D&D based video game as well.
Yeah.
If you haven't played Disco Elysium, it's amazing.
It's one of the, like I did some reading around it after you gifted it to me and I was like, it's so highly rated and it is really good. But no, I didn't finish it.
It's dense as well.
Yeah, it's dense and chewy. I can't remember where I got to. I should probably pick it back up again if I'm honest with you.
Especially if you want to know who the murderer was and
I know. And like your cat, like the way that it meters out the character development is so good. And like once you get into that core gameplay loop, it is really good.
And then you complete it, and then you need to do another replay, not only with different stats to unlock different conversations and quests and missions and stuff, but also you can do the next playthrough off your tits on drugs. And that's what the second playthrough is for. Because no one does on the first playthrough. You want to sober up and become the protagonist, rise to the occasion. Second one, it's everyone else does an evil playthrough, you do a drugs playthrough on the second.
Just
Disco
for reference,
Elysium.
Just for reference, Ryan doesn't mean me being off my tits on drugs, he means my character being off their tits on drugs.
I mean, your character can be as well.
Ryan!
So, back to Fallout.
Yeah.
I was going to make a point about the moral choices of the different games.
Yeah.
So the comic we're doing, and we will get into it, I don't think anyone's on the edge of their seat. Like, when are they going to get to All Roads, the one Fallout comic book adaptation? We
it's
will.
Not very good.
If you're the one person.
It's not very good.
I think I've got a little, I think we've got a little back
I mean,
and forth
it's
to have.
Fine.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. But so,
like, it's a comic.
Yes.
That's all I can really say for it.
But speaking to the games themselves,
yeah.
Fallout New Vegas is one of the best games I've ever played.
Right.
And okay. It's way better than Fallout 3. I remember just having such more of a significant time, a memorable time with New Vegas. And it was only now later in life when I think about them, and I go, actually, New Vegas was a lot better. Like, I had a lot more fun with that. Even though Fallout 3 was kind of, not revolutionary, but it felt revolutionary at the time if you hadn't played a game as dense as that.
Yeah.
And for it to be in the 3D open world model like that.
So did Fallout 3 come before Skyrim?
I think it went Fallout 3, then Skyrim, and then...
Right.
Fallout 4, yeah. I think. And New Vegas before Skyrim.
So were Bethesda developing them on a cycle?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're always got the next one in the background while they're releasing the whatever one. But so the moral question, that's a big thing in Fallout. It's like the whole, it's a kind of a D&D-inspired quest thing, and there's moral questions and that kind of stuff. New Vegas, I think, does a lot better job. So I rewatched a section of H. Bomber Guy's video about it. He loves New Vegas as well, and he's very good. He's like a fucking several hours video, but it's very good articulating why it's so much better. Like, he has done a really good job on that.
Yeah.
Highly recommend watching it. But he pointed out specifically the moral comparisons. So, like, Fallout 3, like I said earlier, the first moral quandary is, hey, there's a town with a bomb in it. Do you want to blow it up?
What happens when you blow the town up?
You set a thing on it, and then you have to read a book to, like, get the skills. And
yeah.
Then you set a thing on it, and you get, like, a remote. And then you have to go to a skyscraper that's got, like, rich people, like, inhabiting it. And you go up to them, and they blow it up from the skyscraper. So you watch from a distance.
Yeah.
Your karma goes, like, like, evil. And then you find out the reason they wanted to blow up was because it was in their view. They didn't like the view of a scruffy town from their skyscraper. So the first moral question there is, do you or do you not genocide a town, essentially, right? In Fallout New Vegas, an example of one that H. Bomber Guy gave in his video was, and all the quests are like this, the example he gives is, so you've got these two factions, the NCR and the Caesar's Legion, which
yeah.
you have read about in the comic, which we'll get to. The NCR are trying to make a government. Like, they're trying to, like, bring the old world back and make it organized and everyone it pitching in, that kind of thing.
Which is shit.
Exactly. But we'll get...
No, it's what you should
that's,
do.
That's the point. Like, it's they are doing a shit job.
It's what you should do post-apocalypse, right? Like, and it's absolutely what you should do.
They're doing a shit job of it. One of the things is because they have all these quests for you when you start to speak to them. And it speaks to the game where it's like, they've got so much shit that needs doing because they're doing a really bad job. Like, they'll give jobs to anyone if you're willing. One of them is find where some water's being rerouted. So they have water being redirected from a river. It's, you know, a desert, so they need to. Not all the water's getting to them. You investigate. You find out some of the water's being rooted off to a bunch of people who are doing their own private thing.
Yeah.
So essentially, they're stealing water from the local NCR government.
Yeah.
So then it becomes a question of, what do you do? Do you report them or do you leave them be? And that sounds like that's a moral question in itself. If you're anti-government or even the slightest, you're going to be like, obviously, I'm not going to tell them. But the reason you're investigating in the first place, because one of the NCR soldiers was murdered, and you find out the people of this group, one of them did it.
Yeah.
So if you report this person, you have to show, you have to rat on the entire group who are stealing this water. And they're stealing water to grow crops. Like, they're not doing anything bad with the water.
They're
literally
not.
Just growing crops and feeding people. So then the moral question becomes, do you let a murderer get away and get, like, frame someone else, like a drug-fueled fiend or a Khan who's like a rebel who's probably mugging and killing people anyway? But do you let the murderer walk away free? And if you don't, you have to report them. If you leave them be, there's the other thing. What do you think you would do in that scenario? I've tried to give you as much as possible. What kind of route do you think you'd go?
Oh my god.
Because I feel like I probably, in the past, I think I probably went the route of not reporting them, right?
Mm.
I feel like that's, you view that as the lesser evil of everything going, right?
Yeah.
Then the problem becomes, and you, this is after you kind of see all the choice, after you see all the choice, you then find out, oh, there's a bunch of farmers who work for the NCR, who are just normal people trying to get by and trying to stay within the lanes of this
And they're society. Not getting enough water for their crops.
They're getting fired because they can't meet the demand because they ain't got the water and they're being sent back. So now you're displacing other people because you wouldn't report these people who are breaking the rules.
I suppose the point is that it gives you these moral choices and it makes you think that one of them is better than the other, but really they're all bad.
Yeah. I don't think
because
even,
you're in a post-apocalypse. None of them are good choices.
I don't think it even bothers trying to make one appear better than the other. It literally just gives you two bad choices, but for different reasons. It goes, you got to pick one or just don't play. Like, it's
and
one
that's
of the
life, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's ultimately life. Like, you're just picking from a bunch of shitty choices that you can make.
Exactly. And that's why, again, the H-Bomber guy puts it best, but that's why New Vegas is so much better than Fallout 3.
It's so interesting. And I've thought about this a lot. Well, no, I've thought about this for about 3 seconds before I started saying it. When we first made video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like escapism. And it's like, what would it be like to be a blue hedgehog who could go really fast?
I mean, if you're starting the earliest video games, you're probably talking like Pong and Space Invaders. And
yeah,
stuff like that.
And it was pure distraction. And then once it got a bit better, it became escapism and distraction. And then as the art form was elevated by technological advancements and, you know, once you had save states, you could then have more complex stories. And once the consoles got bigger and the storage mediums got bigger, you went from cartridges to discs, you could have bigger, longer stories. And then you get to the point where video games sort of turn back on us and go, do you want to have a really dark human experience? And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake. On some level, I just want to see how fast the blue hedgehog can get from A to B. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's all mediums kind of...
No, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. Like, it happened with cinema.
Mm. And I will say, I don't have any examples to back this up. I'd put money on it if I had to. I think there were games way back when. So I watched a series recently called Halt and Catch Fire, and it's about early computers, and it's a really good TV show. And in that, the first games are text games that you literally, like, when computers were just lines of text.
Yeah, point-and-click adventures.
Yeah, but point-and-click without the point-and-click.
Yeah, text-based adventures.
Yes. Choose your own adventures, text-based.
Have you ever played one?
No, never. Not a proper text-based
They're
one.
They're kind
like
of
that.
Fun.
They look fun in the TV show, and I think those were based on like D&D campaigns that already existed.
Yeah.
But even those probably reflected some kind of like you meet a bunch of enslaved elves and
In fairness, you make a very valid point, and you're absolutely right. And I think
it's an allegory for racism.
isn't it just? And you're right. And I suppose I think what I'm talking about, the reason that video games became jovial for a hot minute there is because they had to work out where to put the games consoles in the shops, and they settled on the toy department, not the electronics department. And so they then had to start creating content that was marketed at children, not adults, right?
And not only that, that's why video games are considered... Have we talked about this off air? I mean, we don't talk off air, but... The gender assignment of video games. So.
Yes. So I told you about this, and I think, this is a conversation that we've definitely had.
I think we both had it from different, both got it independently and talked about it.
So essentially what Ryan's referencing is the fact that at some point when Nintendo were making the NES, they decided they were going to put it on the toy aisle, but the toy aisle historically has been split into two halves, a blue aisle and a pink aisle. One for, and I don't like these terms particularly in 2024, but one for boys and one for girls. And so they had to decide which side of the fucking toy aisle the NES would be in, and they decided on the blue aisle, and that really shaped gaming culture for a long time, didn't it?
Yeah, it's because Toys R Us had this predetermined, toys have to be for boys or for girls.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I guess we should make... And they initially did try to make games for both.
Yeah, totally.
But the problem is, the games for boys were shooting, driving, fighting, fun stuff to do on games. The ones for girls, I'm drawing from memory, but I'm pretty sure they were like Sim Life, which was nowhere near the technology to do that. Yeah. Not like The Sims now.
And it's interesting because like I emulated Harvest Moon recently. Legally, fully legally. It was via the SNES emulator on my Switch. I played a bit of Harvest Moon and I was like, this is good, but this kind of game really came into its own with
Animal Crossing. I'm amazed I got that.
Yeah, right? Like Stardew Valley, Animal Crossing, yes. More modern farming sims are just better,
yeah.
Right? In a way that actually I was playing Streets of Rage the other day, and like functionally, a punchy, punchy game, even a modern one, like a really good modern one, hasn't gone much further than like Streets of Rage. Like Streets of Rage totally holds up, whereas yeah. Harvest Moon doesn't necessarily for me hold up against Animal Crossing.
The fighting games, all they did was add extra fighting mechanics.
Yeah.
Like it's still the basic like forward, I mean, back kind of thing.
Functionally, that's all they did with like farming sims and simulation games, but they have gotten way better.
Yeah. They're just more memory to do more things.
Yeah, totally.
Like it can be exactly the same kind of basic mechanics, but if there's just more of them, like it just makes it better.
Whereas functionally a punchy punchy game, you just need something to punchy punchy.
Yeah, but then you get into like different types of moves and stuff, and then yeah. you get into like how every little thing works, like the health bar, that what they yeah. call the hitboxes, like yeah. those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind of stuff, I think, gets a lot more complex than we'll ever know.
Yeah,
because it's just behind the scenes stuff. We just want to play the end result. Like we just want to play the game at the end. You know, those fighting games are so fine tuned that that's when you get like the whole esports stuff.
Yeah,
so you get people like playing in these high leagues with like money, like loads of money on the line, and like yeah. rank, global rankings and that kind of stuff, and they're playing it and it's like, this game has to be like exact as possible, but it also has to be a very common, like every game has to work exactly the same way.
Because League of Legends is a really great example, because League of Legends yeah. has a really, really, I mean, I think, to be honest with you, the only people who play League of Legends play it competitively, right? Like you don't really get casual League players.
I don't know if they're all competitive, but they're definitely, no one's casual about it from what I hear.
Do you know what? I don't know that I would be able to recognize League of Legends if I saw somebody playing it.
No, I think it's top down. That's the only thing I know about it.
So it kind of looks a bit like Diablo 3.
Yeah, I was going to say Diablo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it looks a bit like Diablo. Diablo 3 was sick.
I heard mixed things about, I haven't played Diablo.
I played a bunch of it at house, so you're going to have to bleep out the name.
Right.
When it
extra
came
work
out.
For me, thanks.
Yeah, 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 no worries, bro. No. Should I just start listing off names of people we went to school with just so you have to bleep them out?
Well, I just cut out the entire part.
But what if I pepper it in when I'm making a really good point?
Then so the point gets cut out.
Like, I'll make a salient point about the NES, and then I'll be like...
If you're wondering why there was a big pause just then, it's because I just cut out everything Jamie just said.
No, I will not be censored. My voice must be heard.
You're arguing... You're like a normal person arguing with God right now. Because, like, in the final cut,
in this instance, the men in white coats who edit the podcast for us
yes.
are God.
Exactly.
And, oh my God, I see the restraints coming. A casual listener wouldn't get that joke.
Yeah,
we're starting to build this weird lore around our podcast that we make in a completely sealed white room.
But for me, the podcasts I love and listen to and inspired by are filled with what they refer to as impenetrable banter.
Yeah,
and
right.
that's, I want to build up a wall of impenetrable banter to stop casuals ever coming in and joining us.
So you're talking about these like moral choices that come into Fallout.
Yes.
And that's a huge thing. Is that something that Fallout, this series, sort of introduced into video games, or is it something that they popularized that wasn't super popular before?
It must go back to the text to choices games as well.
But no, because like
I think it got very popular around this time.
So they would have had different choices, right? And there's different paths you could take. But I don't know that there was necessarily this focus on the morality of it. And like, because wasn't Fallout like, you know, in Fallout, it would be like your moral choices would affect the way that certain characters would react to you.
Yeah, certain factions, definitely.
And certain factions wouldn't deal with you if your moral meter went really low and stuff like yes. that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so this moral element had a really like important mechanical, functional purpose within
yeah,
the game.
Yeah, it affected your how you played the game.
Yeah.
And Fallout the series, and I assume Elder Scrolls must have done this as well, so let's say the Bethesda games generally.
Yeah.
They did it quite well compared to how others did it, because how others did it is they'd be like, there's moral choices in the game, and the choices you make affect the how you play it, and ooh, the different endings. And then for the most part, most of them turn out to be, well, there's good, evil, maybe a neutral ending.
Yeah,
those are the only endings, and however you play it, there's the options are you can be good or evil.
I think,
and that's the problem. Binary choices is boring.
So I think the problem is, and again, this is, I think this is the thing that really changed in video games. And it's about cost of development and content and length of games.
It's also over-promising stuff as well to try and make it appealing and sell more.
So the video games that I grew up with in the 90s, they were full of little Easter eggs and things that they didn't necessarily care if you found, but they programmed them in anyway. And, you know, hidden areas and bits that they didn't want you to find. And it feels like with modern games, because it's such a gargantuan task developing these games. Like, they're huge products. There's vast amounts of money being invested into them. That they want you to see everything, right?
Maybe.
There isn't a millisecond of content they don't want you to see, because the story, I mean, for a while in gaming, the story modes got shorter and shorter, right? Particularly with online gaming becoming so important. The meta game would be more important and the story suffered, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I know this obviously isn't the case of Fallout.
I think an important point to make just quickly is I think you're correct when it comes to the mainstream games and specifically like AAA games.
Yeah.
So you're right on that.
Fallout's a AAA game, right?
Yeah, it definitely is now. Like Fallout 4 absolutely was.
But Fallout 3 in New Vegas, I suppose.
It was around, it was close to that, but it wasn't quite. Like Fallout 3 when it came out, no one was expecting it to be as good or as popular as it was.
Yeah. And that was their first time making a console release, right? So Fallout 3 landed on PC and console.
I don't know
Bethesda.
So Bethesda, I think, had made a previous Elder Scrolls before that, that I think was on console.
Yeah.
So they had made console games, but this was the first Fallout. But Bethesda had made a couple at least before then. But again, like people didn't know of those series that well until the big ones came out. So like Fallout 3 for Fallout and Skyrim for Elder Scrolls. Those are the ones that everyone went, oh my God, have you heard of this game series? And then they became ingrained in the culture of gaming, mainstream gaming especially.
I think something that interests me specifically about Fallout is that, and we've talked about this on the podcast, which is that we've talked about this in relation to superheroes, as it relates to superheroes as opposed to video games, but I think it's really relevant, is that like there's certain elements of superhero lore which change over time to represent the things that we're currently concerned about.
Yeah.
And so in early iterations of Peter Parker, like Spider-Man's origin story, he was bit by a radioactive spider. And then as we stopped being quite as concerned about nuclear stuff and, you know, the Cold War ended, we were less concerned about nuclear things. And we were more concerned about genetically modified things, which was a huge concern in the 90s.
Yep.
He moved from being bitten by a radioactive spider to a genetically modified spider.
Yeah.
And the most prevalent sort of post-apocalyptic concept that our generation had was zombies. And I think it's really interesting that the most popular post-apocalyptic video game isn't a zombie game, but a nuclear game. Because nuclear just isn't super zeitgeisty. It wasn't particularly zeitgeisty in the time that Fallout came out.
No, but doesn't it feel like it overtook from zombies, like Cold War kind of era? Like the zombie thing I think was maybe like from George A. Romero, Night of the Living Dead. Like, and we didn't, like,
we grew up in a really zombie-y time, like Left 4 Dead,
but it was an
Shaun of the Dead.
It was an overdone trope by then, I think.
Well, our generation fucking loved zombies.
True.
Our generation fucking loved zombies, and we weren't super into nuclear stuff.
And but the zombie post-apocalypse kind of thing only really came back with The Walking Dead in the noise.
Yeah,
so around this
I suppose the big thing that our generation was super interested in was like Z-Day.
Yeah.
It's like the day the zombies came as opposed to like the actual ensuing post-apocalypse.
Yeah. I think the thing you got to keep in mind is when it comes to the zombie stuff versus like nuclear fallout, like nuclear fallout has never been like an interesting thing to discuss. Zombies are, because you can do like if you make a setting zombies, it's you're killing zombies, you're running away from zombies, you're trying to survive. Like, it's violence and it's action and it's gore and it's everything. Nuclear fallout, like properly, like no one had bother to making it because it's just depressing, isn't it?
It's just a bunch of people walking around going, do you reckon this water's safe to drink? No, this water's not safe to drink.
Now none of it is. But the thing about the Fallout games is they're very creative in being like, let's take this setting and let's just put up, like, make our own version of it. So they took the very bare bones nuclear Fallout and they're like, okay, there's mutants, like, first thing, mutant schools. There's survivors who come out of vaults. That's how they survive. There's power armor, like, there's all these things that, like, became, they made this world off the basis, the bare bones,
and it has a really defined sense of humor, doesn't it?
Yeah, in places. Yeah, one of the best lines I ever remember was from Fallout New Vegas. There's a guy who's working in a solar power plant or something,
right?
And they're like, he's talking about how he got hired, and he's like, they asked me if I had a degree in theoretical physics. I told them I had a theoretical degree in physics.
That's actually quite funny.
And there was also this guy who was trying to find, he needed you to recruit people for him for a club, like a nightclub in this New Vegas.
Yeah.
And you have to find, like, a singer and a comedian and, like, all these ones. And, like, one of the things you have to find is a sex robot. And his name was Mr. Fisto. And the guy who you're doing the quest for... It's so funny because you go back to him every time you find one of these people. So you go back to, like, hey, I found a singer. It's like a ghoul who's dressed up as a cowboy for some reason. And he goes, great, that I'll put her on tonight, whatever. It's like, I found a comedian somehow. And you're like, oh, brilliant. Well, we'll put him there. Like, you're almost there. Like, find the last one for us. And then you come back to him and go, I found the sex robot in an abandoned robot place, whatever. And the guy's like, yes, finally.
Like, he has been waiting.
It's so good. And I think depending on how you play it, you could be like, oh, but it doesn't work though, or something. Like, you can, like, steal it for yourself or something.
You can steal the sex
robot.
And he
goes, no! No, we're so close.
When you played it, did you give him the sex robot?
I think I did. You can also test the sex robot as well.
Did you test the sex robot?
I think I did. I think...
Did you make another a separate save state that was a special save file for you to just get pounded?
I should have, because I think the knowing joke would have been like, you died from the robot. But one of the jokes is like the robot literally sounds like initiating sexual sequence, like that kind of thing. And I think when it literally, like, it fades to black for a second, like your vision does. And then you come back and it says something... Vaguely remember this. It says something like, do not worry, the feeling in your leg shall return soon.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly. So little bits like that were quite funny.
So obviously this comic book didn't make a whole lick of sense to me.
Yep. And again, I like to see what the view is. This comic was made for people who were buying it to read it, to combine it with the game.
So as far as I was aware, from what I could glean, shiny suited Chandler Bing.
Yeah,
was playing the Khans and another faction off against each other, right?
Not really. He just hired the Khans for a job.
Right, so he'd hired the Khans for a job, and then that blonde dude was dying, and he gave him some Persian rugs, right? Some drugs.
I think he gave him drugs, but I think the point was they were laced. So, because I think he gave the laced drugs to that singer in the beginning as well.
Yeah.
By the way, we are talking about the 50 pages spoiler. We're just getting into it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's 0 points separating this. By the way, just to clarify for anyone who's wondering, it's called All Roads, Fallout All Roads. And what's so unique about this is it's the only comic but in the Fallout franchise, which is insane to me, because...
And it's a single issue. It's 50 pages long.
Yeah.
And it's... Well, so it's a prologue, right?
Yes. Yes. Prologue to the...
It's just such a weird way for them to have released this.
Well, it's not that they released this. It's that they only released this. That's bewildering to me. Because as we know, right, and little secret, peek behind the curtain for anyone who's interested. My thinking was, when setting up this podcast, I thought, we have a bit of a cheat code here, because we can talk about anything that's popular in the week.
Yeah.
If it's a franchise, because most of these things have comic book tie-ins.
Yeah.
So we'll just get whatever the tie-in is.
Wow, Ryan, that's so cynical. I can't believe you've done this. I thought we were talking about the Barbie comic that one time because you had a deep and abiding interest in Barbie.
To be fair, that did turn out to be quite interesting.
That was a bloody interesting episode.
But also, we managed to piggyback off the SEO of Barbie.
Well, of course we did. But I didn't realise that was what we were doing, Ryan. I thought the other day when we talked about the Justice League versus Godzilla versus King Kong,
which was also really good,
we were doing it in earnest.
It was really good, though.
I can't get through it with a straight face.
That could have been in earnest. We both really enjoyed it.
It was fantastic. I thought we were doing it sincerely, Ryan. I didn't realise that this is why we were doing this.
We are sincerely reading and giving our thoughts on the texts.
It's just the order in which we do them is sometimes dictated by exterior forces, right?
Yes. And so in saying all that, the point I'm trying to get across is every franchise does these tie-in comics because they're like, they're low cost to produce. You hire a writer, you hire an artist. Sometimes they're the same person and you get them to churn something out that's in the IP that you own.
We have never struggled to find a comic for something, have we?
Exactly.
And we've talked about Barbie. We've talked about Star Wars a bunch of times. What else have we done?
I mean, Star Wars was a very obvious one because those comics are actually known for being quite good in themselves.
Like, they're good, yeah.
Let me go through the list just to give a idea.
We've done Turtles, but they started in comics, so that kind of makes sense.
Dune had a comic. Dune, but it was still really good.
Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty tie-in. Cash Cow. Just complete cash cow of a comic. Hang on. Doctor Who had a really good comic.
Well, medium.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I'd read more about it.
Yeah, no, because that was the one with the story dudes, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. The guys who are us.
Yeah. No, I remember that episode.
But the main point being, if you own a franchise and you own intellectual
property...
Make
a comic. We'll talk about it.
No, but just make a comic and you just make money. Like, I'm sorry to go like the cold capitalist like route. I'm not for this. Like, I generally prefer...
Bethesda, you're leaving money on the table making comics.
I genuinely prefer like content and fiction that has been made because someone was passionate about the story. And like that is the best kind. So
but sometimes
and that's why
you just need a Barbie comic.
But how are you? They are leaving money on the table. Like people will like Fallout, especially right. The Fallout franchise has so much bollocks, like. Paraphernalia, like you can buy steel Brotherhood of Steel helmet head and put it on your mantelpiece.
And I've seen
you can buy a light up Pip Boy for your arm. Doesn't do anything, but you can buy one.
And they made special controllers, and they made like figure collections.
You can buy Nuka Cola. The nuclear themed cola from the show. From the games. You can buy that. How have they done all that? And they haven't bothered just churning out some comics.
Yeah,
and I'm
right?
saying, if they churned out comics and they were poor quality, I'd be criticizing them on that. Yeah. I'd be calling them out saying, you're just cashing in, making a quick buck churning out bollocks.
But now you're judging them for not having
but
cashed
it's
in,
so
which is
much
funny
weirder
here.
That they're not. Because they're not holding 20 principles. They're not like...
They're selling Nuka Cola.
Yeah, they're not like, no, we believe in the sanctity of the Fallout franchise. Like, they're just... It's like they've got executives who just haven't heard of the comic medium.
And like they've already done it once.
Yes, that's even weirder. There was none, that'd be more acceptable.
Why not just like the same writer and artist just go, do you want to make some more?
It's hard to imagine they could not have lost money on it, right? They paid an artist, they paid a writer, made a
pennies
50,
probably.
Maybe. And that sucks in itself. That's a whole nother issue.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation for a different
50
day,
pages, churned it out, tying with the game release, like, great. How have they not just... surely they must have made some money to be like, let's do this again.
There must be, because like, obviously we're reading this comic that's 50 pages long, and if I'm going to be honest with you, Ryan, not particularly good.
I thought it was just fine, which is like, that's like the most.
Yeah,
I
which is
it.
Not particularly good. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was fine. It was perfectly tolerable. There were some characters, some stuff happened. Somebody died in the desert.
Yeah. I liked some of the art. I liked some of the art. Some of the faces were quite janky.
Some of the faces were janky, but when he was talking about the past and everything went red and you've just got like shiny suited man silhouetted against that red background.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
I really like that too.
Good contrasting colours.
And then some of the composition on the panels where he's in the desert are quite good.
Yeah.
Like, compositionally speaking, some of the art is quite good. Obviously, the story was really lacking for me, but I think that's because I didn't have the context of it being a fucking prologue to a game that I've not played, right? Yeah. But, yeah, the fact that they've already churned one out, like, why not just do some more? Like, there's, you know, they could have built that into a whole epilogue.
Yeah, they could have done way more with this.
And the way that the Avatar comic that you were talking about, where the stuff we were reading was happening concurrently with the action in the TV show, but it's like little snapshots of things that could have been in the TV show that we didn't see.
Yeah.
And then there's like a whole ass sequel to one of the TV shows that they made as a comic book.
I mean, they keep the story going. Like, there's a lot of comics. Yeah. When I was recommending it to you, I was just talking about the first one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They released a bunch of comics that take place between two of the television shows.
Yeah, totally. So they've already hired an artist. They've already presumably approached a publisher to publish this thing.
And not just one artist. For this, I'm going to double check this.
Oh, I bet it was designed by a committee, wasn't it? I bet there was a bunch of them.
Not even a committee as such, but hang on. Let me get the page up just to be accurate.
In the interest of accuracy, Ryan's going to do some Googling. So how is everyone having a good week?
So they actually, in the separate pages, they had pencils and inks done by two sets of people.
Right.
So, and they list on the first page. So again, this isn't just a quick churn out. They were like, some of the pages need to be different art style to the other times. Cause it's like,
oh yeah. And I get that. That comes across.
You know, flashbacks and different areas and different character perspectives and all that changes. So, script by Chris Avalon, who did exactly what was asked, I think. Just a quick prelogue story.
He knew the assignment. Yes. Yeah.
But the art, you've got pencils and inks by Gene Diaz and Belladino Bravo. Mm. I probably got that pronunciation wrong. But they did some of the pages. And then the other pages, pencils were Wellington Alves and Nelson Piera. And so they've gone to the level of like making the art different on different pages. So I think a decent amount of effort has gone on to like how it looks and stuff. Not as much in the story, but again, it was. but it only was what it was. It was what it needed to be.
The thing is though, right? How many comics have we read where the first 50 pages, that's like two issues of a standard comic book, roughly?
Yeah, yeah, just about, yeah.
Like, how many comics have we read where the first 50 pages aren't particularly exciting?
Yeah, and maybe this would have built up into something.
Well, the thing is, we don't know what it would have done, but it could have done. Yeah, I mean, I think this was an interesting way in to you and I having a conversation about video games more generally and just what we like and what we don't like, because we've never done that before.
Mm.
I don't have a lot to say about the comic, unfortunately. Like, I just think the story didn't make a lot of sense to me because I didn't really understand who these people were. And to be honest with you, in that 50 pages, it didn't make a lot of effort to tell me who these people were and what was going on.
No, I did find it interesting, and I wanted to see what your perspective was. I found it interesting as just like a story where it feels like you're dropped in the middle of it.
Yeah, totally.
I want to see how, if that intrigued you at all, like how it worked at all to bring you in.
So I certainly got a really good sense of Mr. Chandler McShiny suit.
His name is Benny, if that helps at all.
He's Chandler McShiny suit. Okay. Like, you know.
Chandler Bong.
He's Chandler Bong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a really good sense of who Chandler Bong was. Like this sort of, you know, Chancer who doesn't really care about any of the people that he's dealing with, but is just using them as a means to an end.
Yeah.
And the way he used and abused that singer is a really great example of the way he treats people.
I will say, I think the dialogue was surprisingly realistic.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
The dialogue was fine. Again, though, I feel like one of the things I remember from watching people play a bit of Fallout is that the dialogue was really good in Fallout.
Yeah. Never over exposition or like try to make it as naturalistic as possible while also being like a pick your response. And
yeah. Whereas the dialogue in Skyrim is a little bit more like,
"Hark, go there."
Yeah.
Stop in the name of whatever.
Yeah, like the guards in the towns when you kick off and stuff, like it's all a bit much, isn't it?
Bloody hell, there's a dragon. it's probably a line from
Bloody hell, Gavda.
Ronnie,
I nearly dropped my tea.
Bloody hell, Harry, it's a dragon.
Sorry, Rupert.
Nah, he's fine.
Rupert listens.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. From his ice cream van.
He owns an ice cream van, but he's one of the few adults who owns an ice cream van for non-weird or financial reasons.
Yeah, he just, when he got his first like big boy money from Harry Potter, he was like, I'm buying an ice cream van and a hovercraft. He's a nutter. I love him.
So what's interesting about the story is, I did like that they put a lot into this kind of character story that ultimately didn't matter in the end.
Right.
So again, for the spoilers, this character Chance is a mute character who's got PTSD from something that happened before. The event they're referencing, which was called, the Bitter Springs Massacre.
Yeah.
Right. So again, a little window into like the larger story in the specifically New Vegas, Fallout New Vegas only. But that group I told you about before, the NCR, basically accidentally massacred a whole bunch of people, and they're still trying to be like the government. So, you know, a lot to say politically about that kind of stuff. Apparently what it was, because I had to look up just to kind of give myself a refresher. So the Khans are like a group of like pirate mercenary kind of, you know, they're like, they're not quite as bad as like the Fiends that are like drugged up violent psychopaths, but they are like robbing people and killing a few people as well. There was this area called the Bitter Springs, and the NCR intelligence they had was, this is the stronghold where all the bad people are hiding out, and they're doing their evil deeds here, and they've killed a couple of ours like on the traveling nearby, so we're gonna take them out kind of thing. And only once they were in the process of taking them out, they're going, intel was a little bit off. They are the Krayt Khans, and they are here, and there's a bunch of bad people there. Also, their wives and families and children. And
they kill all the women and
children. That's why it's called the Bitter Springs Massacre. So a little bit like a little window into like the larger complex history and lore within this New Vegas video game, which I thought was good. And again, the character mute from the PTSD, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And then just goes on a killing spree once he starts fighting some of the fiends.
I mean, PTSD does weird things to people.
Mm. I do like
Made Prince Andrew not sweat.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
I did hear a joke the other day, which was some joke about Prince Andrew, and the punchline is like, that's right, no sweat.
I watched Scoop recently. It was pretty good.
Scoop?
Yeah, it was a drama.
You sound like I should know that.
Yeah, so it was a straight to Netflix film. It was a dramatization of the process by which the person who managed to get him to do that Newsnight interview managed to get him to do it.
I heard about that. Yeah, is that any good?
So, I mean,
I said like, you sound like I should know that. I've heard of the concept. I just didn't know it was called Scoop.
So Gillian Anderson plays the woman from Newsnight,
right?
And then the tall lad with the massive dong from Sex Education.
I know what you mean, yeah.
He plays a paparazzi who took the initial photo of Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein. And then fucking Billy... What's her face? Billy
Piper?
Doctor Who. Yeah, Billy Piper plays the protagonist.
Right.
So all the performances are really good.
Yeah, I might check out.
So all the performances are good. I like that kind of dramatization of real life events thing that Netflix is obsessed with churning out.
That sounds really interesting. I might check out. I'm on the kind of on and off thing with my streaming where I'll do one per month. I'll rotate, like, bring
so which
Netflix
one have you
back
got at
into
the moment?
The Disney Plus right now.
Disney Plus right now. I mean, so you're just watching Hamilton constantly?
No, I recommended them last week, Bad Batch and X-Men 97.
Yeah.
I'm also rewatching New Girl because it's really good.
So the other thing I'm watching quite a lot of at the moment is an Australian reality TV show called The Block.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Dude, it's so good. It's so fucking good, you know?
Mm.
So what happens is they get a fucking apartment in a block and they have to renovate it. I'm going to stop doing this really bad accent now.
It's better than most people's.
Right?
Australia,
well, you know.
Like, you've been watching the show. So
exactly. I've been watching a lot of The Block. So they have to renovate it, but they also have to live in it. And they have like weekly challenges. So you have to like do a bathroom in 48 hours or whatever. And normally they'll do their first challenge as a bedroom. So they've got a bedroom to sleep in. But then they have to renovate this whole place while living in it. And they have budgets and they have to like deal with genuine real world considerations like tools downtimes because of noise laws. And like, you know, they have a foreman who goes around and is like, this isn't up to spec. We're actually selling this property when you get off the show. This needs to be right kind of thing. But Australian reality TV just has a different flavor to British and American stuff. Like, I can't, the only way I can describe it is like, just go watch an episode of The Block, because it's really compelling and really good. And that's on Amazon Prime. So when you next get Prime.
Yes. And when I next have a gap in my schedule, I will, it will be like 50th on the list I already have.
Yeah.
But it'll get there eventually. I always put stuff at the bottom of the list. Nothing jumps up unless it's comic book related, because I kind of have to for this.
Well, yeah. The other thing I watched recently that I really enjoyed was Tori Tomlinson, stand-up comedian, American.
Oh, yep. I've heard of her, yeah.
Like, fucking hilarious. Mm. Like, really, like, made me giggle in my stomach funny. And that's the other thing that I watched.
Especially when you're by yourself. That's how you know when something's really good. Dude, really funny.
I was watching it on a train to Great Yarmouth.
That's the best.
Which, for anyone that doesn't live in Norfolk, the train from Great Yarmouth to Norwich is not an auspicious journey.
It's pretty depressing.
But I giggled for at least a third of it because I was watching the stand-up special, and it was very good.
We should probably touch back on the comic for a little bit before the end of the episode.
I mean, do I have to?
I was just going to make little
remarks. Yeah, well, no, you actually have notes. Like, you have things that you want to talk about.
The least notes for anything we've done.
Do you know what? Normally, I'm used to you scrolling up and down through your notes, but I can see it's not even one full page of your phone screen.
Not so much scrolling. little bits I liked. One was, I liked the Khans recognizing that Benny must have almost certainly used to be a tribe or tribal, because he's outpacing them. He's walking faster than them in the desert at his hottest peak while in a suit.
Yeah.
So a little bits like that I appreciate. It feels like the writer could have written a very interesting story if they were actually given the permission to.
I mean, what's there is good. It's just there's not much of it.
Yes. And then some specific details in the drawings, in the big fights. There was one part where the character Chance puts a knife through one of the fiend's mouth.
Yeah.
And you see it going in through the mouth and out through the cheek.
Which is what would happen.
And pulling the skin and stuff in between. So little bits like that. I was like, these are really talented artists, so I think we're being slightly wasted on not doing more gory action scenes because they're really good at them. The reveal. Oh, and then one of the fiends gets a flamethrower directly to the face and it just goes straight to the bone.
Yeah.
Cool as well. And then right at the end, the reveal with the singer that was mentioned before kind of wedged in a little bit of like, ooh, there's a subplot here. And ooh, and this
there
is the
wasn't,
reveal.
I mean, there wasn't enough plot for there to be a subplot.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Like, 100%. But yeah, so overall, it was interesting. It's the ancillary information about it being the only Fallout comic ever is more interesting to me than the comic itself.
I think I knew coming into this that the most interesting conversation was going to be about video games, video game culture, Fallout, kind of you know the almost singular and uniqueness of thought that went into the Fallout games.
Yes.
Because they are special and people really highly regard them, don't they?
Also, at one point there's a giant robot that you're doing like a siege with, but it's been programmed to be anti-communist. So it's
because
it's
America.
Yeah, exactly. And it's walking along me like, halt, communism detected, firing lasers. it's really cool.
So there must be a reason that we're doing this.
Yes, there's a Fallout TV show coming out.
Oh shit.
Which will have come out already.
So they didn't want the comic book money, but they did want that good TV money.
Admittedly, there's probably a lot more money in the TV show.
There's a lot more risk, though.
But it doesn't make sense with the comic because it's such a lower cost to produce.
Yeah, totally.
That's the thing. So we are going to do a very quick live reaction to what you think of the Fallout TV
trailer.
Show trailer.
Yeah, totally. Because I've not seen it. I mean, I don't watch a whole bunch of TV, but... Ryan,
mm-hmm.
That looks fucking fantastic.
Yeah. It's coming.
They got dog meat in there.
Yeah, they got the suit of armor, the power armor, looking good.
Dude, it looks really good. And that line, "That's an awful small drug and an awful big bucket of drugs." That's a good line. That's a really good line. Oh yeah, that looks really good. Can we like do a special episode on that when it comes out? Because it looks great.
Yeah, apparently it's coming out this week. I think it's all being dropped in one go. 2 days, apparently.
So where's it being dropped?
Prime. Amazon Prime. We'll have to get Prime for a month, but yeah, we can watch it.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, it looks good. Yeah. Like, everything looks the way it should. Everyone kind of... Yeah, and I remember... Now I remember that kind of
old-timey Americana feel that Fallout had.
So,
and that was like old show tunes playing in the background. Like, it had the feel, didn't it?
Yes. And there's a specific reason for that, which is something we surprisingly have not touched on with the whole Fallout franchise. The reason it feels like that is the timeline of events basically means in the 50s, they accelerated technological advancements because of nuclear power. Yeah. So they were all, there was like no... I think there was like no nuclear fallouts like Hiroshima or
Chernobyl.
Yeah, Chernobyl or anything like that. So they went full fucking steam forward. Nuclear power became really technologically advanced very quickly, but because of how fast that advancement was going, the cultural things in the 50s slowed down. It stayed like that for quite a few decades afterwards, and then all the bombs dropped. So then it's so that's why it's kind of captured in that time. The other thing that I thought worth mentioning is Fallout 4 sucked. Fallout 4 was the one I bought a PlayStation 4 to play on.
Oh, I thought everyone liked it.
I think it was controversial. Problem was, as you were playing it, so the two major issues I had, and there's a bunch.
Wasn't Fallout 4 the one that was like purely MMO?
No, that was Fallout 76 or Vault 76.
Which no
something
one
like
liked.
That. No, that everyone hated that. But in Fallout 4, and it was because it was built off the back of Fallout 4. In Fallout 4, they had this whole base building bollocks.
Yeah,
I was like, fine, I don't care or want anything to do with this, but fine if it's in the game, I just won't use it. And then you had to maintain these bases and these areas and stuff. And that involved this character called Preston Garvey, who would always have a mission for you. Mm. And then you had to go to him, fast travel, but you still had to go to him to get the mission. And he goes, it became a meme, but it was something like, thank God you're here, another colony needs your help. It was just
every time.
And it got, and the missions were just go to a place, kill some people without even like a unique cutscene or anything.
Yeah,
so it was all filler in that regard. Mm. And the main story literally became, so you know this whole thing with factions, Fallout 3 had all its factions, Fallout New Vegas had NCR, Legion, and a special independent one in the middle, which was actually really fun and really interesting, where you didn't see coming at the beginning. Had all this. Fallout 4 is literally, here's the four factions. Whoever you do missions for will win out, will beat the others. And it literally gets, it's meant to be philosophical because like one of the factions is like robots.
Mm.
And they're kind of fighting for like robot, not supremacy, but just like
rights.
Yeah, rights and stuff. I think it leads into supremacy as well. It's all like cyborgs and that kind of thing. But it's literally I was playing and I got to a point where it's like, if I'm at missions where if I do this mission, then this team will hate me. And if I do this mission, this team will hate me. So I know I'm at the point where I have to pick
a which
side
faction
to win.
Yeah.
Which is boring. That's so fucking boring. In New Vegas, you work for one side, the other side starts to hate you, but there's a gray area that takes place across like a bunch of missions where you're working for both and you can fuck one over even worse because they don't know you're working for. So it gets to a point in missions where it's like either you have to assassinate the leader of one or you stop the assassination. So you have to, it gets to like a precipice there, but you can be having played one side the whole time and then gets to that point and go, actually, we need you to prevent the assassination. You go, yeah, of course. And it's like, actually, I'm going to kill him myself. And then like that build up and that reaction afterwards is very natural. Like, because they've written a pivotal moment that requires one side or the other, right? In Fallout 4, it's literally, so which team do you want to win? And it's like, shut up. Like, I was so disappointed by Fallout 4.
So
I just needed to get that off my chest.
No, that's fair. I mean, this has been an interesting episode. I think we should do this again.
Yeah.
Where we actually just use the podcast as an opportunity to have a conversation about a broader topic. I've had fun.
Yes.
I've had fun. I hope you've had fun.
Most of the time, there will be a tie-in comic for us to sneak that in.
Yeah, this is it.
And we know for Fallout, there's at least one.
Well, yeah. I mean, if there's a second season of this show, we're fucked.
Yes. There's no others. There's no other comics.
We'll have to, like, commission
one.
We'll have to commission one. So thank you so much for listening. Today the podcast was therapy for Jamie. I needed it.
Yep.
So this has been wonderful.
Next week, another thing.
Yeah, next week, something else.
Something else. There's nothing in the books.
If you want to see more of us, we have a YouTube channel where Ryan masterfully edits small clips from the podcast into shorts.
And thank you.
That's Comic Literate Podcast.
Just Comic Literate, I think.
Yeah, just Comic Literate Podcast on YouTube. You'll find us. Some of them do really well. Some of them are really good. They're all pretty good, but some of them are really good. The last one was particularly fun. If you want to email us, comicliteratepodcast@gmail.com. And then if you want to leave us rude and mean comments, do that literally anywhere. And if it's really rude and really mean, I will fucking read it out.
Or if it's 5 stars.
Or if it's 5 stars.
Yeah.
Have we had any really particularly mean ones the past week?
None that I've noticed. We had one person who was asking when we're going to do a part 2 or volume 2 of The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is, I'm pretty sure volume 2 is as well, an Alan Moore comic. So maybe,
but probably never, because to be honest with you, when we've done a part 2 in the past, we've not enjoyed the process.
Yeah, but the story is it's a very different story, this one. I think we'll get more out of it than the part 2 Scott Pilgrim.
So, you know when people do these things where it's like, day whatever of me asking for this, if this guy comments every week for the next like 6 months on every short, week whatever of me asking them to do a part 2 of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, we will do it.
But every comment has to be as the Bernie meme. I'm once again asking where volume 2 of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is.
This is it. Yeah, that's what you have to do, this guy. So whoever that guy is, yeah, we will do it. But we just need to we just need some dedication from you, my G. But we will make that happen for you.
And this all comes from Jamie, because I was fully prepared to do it just off one half-assed YouTube comment.
No. I want
that was all the pressure I needed.
I want dedication for this guy. And then when we're like prepping to make the episode, I'm going to reach out to him and be like, I want a recorded message from you for the episode. Like, I want you to be in it.
This is quite a lot of a call to action. This is a lot.
Yeah, dude. Like, I'm so glad that somebody likes something that we've made enough that they want more of it.
Yeah.
But I want some dedication from that guy.
See, I'm a lot easier when it comes to like suggesting episodes. I'm like, you've taken the time just to write a foreword comment.
I'm mom, your dad.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I'll do it for it immediately.
So, yeah, for that guy, you know what's happened. Like, there's a call to adventure. There's a call to action there for you.
I reckon one more comment and that would be enough. That would be enough to push us over the edge.
Yeah, literally. Wasn't there that one guy who we responded to their comment and then they commented again?
Yeah, yeah.
That was great.
That was fun.
That was a fun time.
It made us feel like we're not just in a blank room with cryogenic pods and a two-way mirror.
This is why we're stretching out the end of this podcast, because I don't want to go back to my pod.
That's... It's like temporary death.
No, sleep. Well,
what a line to end on.
It's like temporary death. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.